Blog Talk Radio.
In a world of so much hate, crime and injustice, what we need right now is some universal love. Unconditional love, y'all.
Pato Bonson sounds almost as good in the studio as he does live, doesn't he? Well, hey, the first time I heard that song, I was at the LA conference, The Thrill of Loving Service, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. This is Andre Traversa with the Cosmic Citizen Radio Show. With me is my partner in crime and chaos and corruption, Paula Thompson. How are you, Paula?
Thanks for that dubious distinction.
Oh, of course. Well, you know, it sounds so good. It's just got, you got the three C's there, you know. Actually, three C's, crime, chaos, and corruption. There you go. So you got to have that alliteration thing going on. I'm sure that since you're...
And cosmic citizenship, don't forget that.
That's right. And, you know, since you are a lover of poetry, I'm sure you're familiar with alliteration and how good that sounds. So we are back with you this morning on The Cosmic Citizen. This is Andre Traversa. We are going to talk about this great theme, which is The Thrill of Loving Service. That was the theme of the Fellowships Conference in L.A. a year ago, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And with us to talk about that is somebody who's just really passionate about this person. I've heard him speak on it several times. This is the theme of all of his speeches pretty much recently, and when he speaks at conferences. He comes from the great state of Vermont, which is noted for its independence in so many ways. He is a carpenter, as far as I understand. He built his own house. This is Phil Taylor. Phil, welcome to the Cosmic Citizen.
Hey, well, thank you. Thank you for that introduction, and it's appreciated to be on the show with all you guys. It's sort of like a study group on the radio.
Exactly. We've been accused of that before, of being a study group.
Now, Andre, you don't realize this, but the lovely Christina Seaborn is also with us on the line. She was our first caller. She called before you did. So Christina is with us right now.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Christina.
Hey, Christina.
We are going to, Phil, I was going to ask you, oh, is it true, by the way, Phil, that you built your own house? Is that true?
I did, yes.
Wow.
After building so many other people's houses, I had to do my own. And it's funny because there's a saying that we do as carpenters is that you'd never try this at home. Try it in someone else's home first. And so I did that, and then I tried it out in my own house. So that's the benefits of kind of being a carpenter. You learn all this cool stuff, and then you get to do it in your own house.
Well, isn't that more like being a contractor? I mean, I didn't think carpenters actually built their own houses. I thought that was more like a... And I guess when I think of someone building a house, I guess I think of a whole construction crew. I mean, did you do it all by yourself, or did you have any assistance?
Yeah, mostly carpenters. A lot of carpenters I know, they start out, you know, just being a subcontractors, and then they go on to being contractors. And they're a pretty talented bunch. We have a illustrious lineage. if you want to go back 2,000 years, we have...
Exactly. And so I know this is not the topic of our show, but now you got me curious. Did you do this by yourself, or did you have any assistance?
Oh, you definitely need assistance. You need help. You need help, yeah.
So you probably got a bunch of illegal aliens working on your
No, I had some good guys. I had some great guys.
There you go. Well, so we're, as I said, we're going to talk about the thrill of loving service. Why is service something that you're so passionate about? I heard you speak about it in L.A., which was the theme in L.A., and you just spoke about it recently at a conference in Boulder, which was about going the second mile, which I guess is a lot about service, too. But you seem quite passionate about this whole topic. I mean, why is it so? Why does it get you so excited?
You know, I think it was a growing realization that came to me of the importance of service. And it really came about when a good friend of mine, a Orange Book reader, sat down and he said to me, you know, Phil, you're at that point in your life when you're ready to be of greater service. And what you need to do is sit down and pray to be a service. And I did that. And it was one of those things where it's like, be careful for what you pray for, because, you know, it really just opened up the floodgates of service opportunities that started coming my way. And I think as I went down that path and I started finding these different opportunities to serve, whether it was in my local community or, you know, for the Orange Book organizations, or even as I just kind of passed by in my personal ministry, you start to realize that there's a lot of benefits that come from being of service, and just beyond the whole notion of just this being selfless and doing good to others, you really find out that there's a lot of spiritual growth that comes from the challenging nature of service, and I think that's what really got me sort of interested into it, and I sort of began to realize that it was just an integral part of my spiritual growth. And then later on, just the realization that, you know, service is really one of those other watchwords of the universe. I think we're destined to serve in this life and all throughout our universe career.
You know, I think of service as the as God's economy. And I had this epiphany recently about the long, long journey to paradise, and here we all are, you know, these pilgrims along this road just toiling and working our way on this amazing and long journey, and this all brought, you know, came to me from this idea of going the second mile, and how many times they refer to us as sojourners or pilgrims, which means we're traveling, we're journeying onward, and you know, and then I thought, well, you know, God has this gigantic family, this huge family of cosmic beings all over the universe of universes, and we're all migrating inward toward the center of all things. And it's a long journey and a hard journey. And he's counting on us to help each other. And I thought of this family that lives next door, that grew up next door to me. Two families, actually. One had 13 children and the other one had 8 children, 2 Catholic families, one on either side of me. And I was always amazed by these families that, you know, if you were not willing to do what you were supposed to do, if you didn't do your chores, if you didn't serve the family, you weren't of much value to that family, because that family couldn't have survived if everybody didn't pull his weight, even the youngest. And it makes me think of Jesus saying, you know, he among you who would be truly great would be the one to serve the others, because from his point of view, from Jesus' point of view, from the angels' point of view, from God's point of view, they've got this big job to get us all to paradise, all of us pilgrims, and if we're not willing to help each other, we don't have much value to them, you know? We become their eyes, we become their ears, we become their hands, because they're in the spirit realm and we're in the material realm. And all along the way, we get to help our peers in the journey. And what a privilege, what an honor that is. But you had said earlier, Phil, you mentioned the challenges of service, and I wondered if you could kind of expound on that. What do you think are the challenges?
Yeah, you know, just to add on to what you're saying of being of value, and I always feel that service is really the opportunity for us to make God's reality a present here on this life. You know, it's through us that He serves, and I think that example of a family and being of service in the family is such a great example, because that really is where we first begin to learn this concept of selflessness or this other than ourselves being in service anyway. But as far as the challenges of service, you know, I spoke about this in my last speech at the conference in Boulder, and I think there's a certain nature in service that when you're in service to others, you're fulfilling a need, a want, something that is lacking in need of supply. And those needs exist because quite often they're difficult, you know. You know, if you have people, say, who are homeless or something, you know, it's not easy for them to find the means to get a house or to learn that, you know, the life skills to get that house and that sort of lifestyle in order. Or, you know, it's helping in your local schools. There's so many needs out there that go unfulfilled. And they go unfulfilled because they're difficult to render.
Right.
And I said that's why, like, service quite often can be difficult and a challenging sort of thing. Not always the case. I don't want to, you know, go too far into abstractions, but I think it is in that difficulty of service, though, that there's a great value, because it becomes a struggle, it becomes a challenge, and it forces you to reach down to the depth of your soul and upwards towards the heavens to find that spiritual guidance and help to you know, render a wholeness to these areas of need.
You know, Phil, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to put you on the spot. Maybe this is too personal of a question, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. And if you can persecute me later if you don't like it. So
fire away, my friend.
All right. I know you're married, and I know your wife is not a reader. I don't think per se.
Yeah.
Okay. But let me ask you something. Have you had opportunities to serve with your wife in other, maybe not so much in UB-related areas, but in other areas? Have you found any kind of fulfillment? Is there a fulfillment that comes with serving with a partner?
I would say right now my greatest service, and I think the greatest service you can render is the service of raising a family,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that partnership that you really – You do find this great sort of, I don't know, experience of working together. But I think beyond that, in a spiritual sense, you know, my wife, you know, even though she doesn't read the Urantia book, she's an incredible servant in and of herself.
Oh, I believe that. That's what I was asking.
She's, like, very active in the community. She's, like, president of the Chamber of Commerce. And she's always working to make things better in the community. I mean, she does a lot of these, like, events, to make our small town, like, sort of, like, you know, much more warm and charming, so we live very similar lives in the sense that she serves in her areas and I serve in mine. So I don't know if that answers your.
Well, no, I was wondering if you, outside of your family, I was wondering if you found an area where you've been able to serve together.
I would say it's in the community. For sure. I mean, we're both sort of very active in the school system, and I'm a school board member. And that's another area of which I'll probably talk about, of challenging service, which is not, you know, it's not sort of spiritually oriented, but it's totally spiritual in nature, because you really have to be in those challenging areas.
Don't you think one of the challenges of service, and I think you've kind of covered this in your talks about it, because I think I've seen several of them about service in there, and the last time in Boulder you said something that really touched my heart. Well, you have every single time, but this one really got to me, and it was something that was, I think, you got as an answer to a prayer, and it was because the service was so challenging. And one of the things that you shared is how thankless sometimes service can be, how unappreciated it is, how people don't realize how difficult what you're doing is, and then you not only do they not thank you for being of service, you become a target because you were willing to step out there and do it, and now all of a sudden you're you know on the front lines for abuse. So, you know, I think those are certainly some, for me at least, that I see some of the challenges.
I mean, that. the school board service, and I think anybody who's, you know, out there listening has been on the school board knows, I mean, that is like the poster child for a thankless job, you know, because basically it's about raising taxes on your local citizens, and it's, you know, it's always a difficult environment, and there's a lot of different, like, competing personalities and, you know, not always the spiritual sort of outlook of people when you're in your inner association with them. And, you know, it's funny, though, because I think when you take on or you engage in these areas of service, and I think through across the board in areas where you're trying to advance the culture of an environment and really to make things, to strive to make things the way they ought to be. Like one of the big struggles that I've had in my meetings with in the school boards is just to return to a level of civility where we can treat each other as or respect each other on the level of brother and sister. And you're right, you stick out when you get up and you say, hey, this isn't right, this isn't the way we're treating each other. You know, people are angry and frustrated, and they'll just go right after you. And, you know, but I think from the enlightened perspective of that, you know, you're doing this, you know, because, number one, you prayed to be of service, but also because you're doing it for God and that there's so many other benefits in terms of spiritual growth and development that, like, the fact that you sometimes become a target of, you know, resentment or you don't receive any thanks, it doesn't really matter, I think, anymore, you know, because you're doing this for righteousness' sake, and that's a reward in and of itself. And I think that's what makes it these serving in these difficult areas sometimes just truly a pleasure and rewarding, and it just doesn't matter if you don't really get any thanks. Although, I tell you what, though, it blew me away just a few months ago. I was sitting in our town meeting, and people had started saying thank you, and it was amazing how civility was returning, and I remember coming out of that meeting. Actually, my wife had commented, "Do you realize how thankful everyone was?" And I did. I think you're so into the moment when you're you know, at the front of those meetings, and you just come back saying, you know, God is great, because look, you know, you've actually rendered some transformation there, and you know, maybe it's only you and a couple other people noticing, but the change does happen, and it's truly rewarding, and that's probably the thanks right there.
Well, and it's through persistence too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And not giving up, just persisting and hanging in there, hanging tough, holding up that light of truth, holding up the goodness that you have to hold up, and then eventually people will start to see it, you know?
Yeah.
And it will have an effect. I've really found that to be true.
Absolutely.
So tell us, Phil, about, because we've been talking about service in a kind of general, abstract way. Tell us some of the things. Okay, you talked about your time on the school board. Tell us the story that you tell to a lot of the crowds that you speak to. You talk about how you were going to you got involved with renovating an old high school.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
It's funny because this was like my first service opportunity that I got after making that prayer to be of service. And the funny thing about it was I tried like hell to not take on this service opportunity because I had in my mind the idea that I was going to serve in some spiritual capacity. So I was saying to myself, you know, I don't want to get too involved with this because I want to focus on spiritual service. And it was just like, all I can say was there was sort of like a soreness on my backside, and I realized it was my angels just kicking me in the pants and saying, like, we want you to do this. You know, I kind of joked that the reason I became chairman was that they said, you know, whoever wants to become chairman, please step forward, and everyone took a step back, and I wasn't paying attention. And it was, you know, it was something that I willfully made the decision that I was going to do it, but I didn't. I did it because I thought it was it just needed to happen. My kids are going through the school. Basically, my job is to find a solution to fix up this high school that's falling apart. And we've had basically three other chairmen before me trying to do this. We've been going on for 10 years. It's a difficult situation because tax-wise, we really can't afford any more money, and the state's really not helping us out. So I walked kind of into all of this, and it was a really bitter, sort of contentious environment that I kind of stepped into. And it probably culminated, I think, in the first few months of being there, when we had this one town meeting where we had to make this one decision. And there was about 200 people in that town meeting, and boy, they were angry. They didn't trust the board. They felt that they were being lied to, and they were calling for the board's resignation. And I kind of joke it was sort of a few pitchforks shy of a riot. I remember getting up there, and I wasn't on the school board yet, but I knew I had to say something. And I remember saying to Michael, I said, you know, what do you want me to do here? And so I didn't really know what to say, but I knew he was going to be with me, and I just got up and spoke. And what I said was, I said, I just wanted to thank the board. I wanted to thank the board for all their work in these difficult circumstances and in these difficult times. And I'm really concerned that our community, if we don't recognize the people who serve in our community, no one's going to get up and serve anymore. And when I said that, some people were saying, oh, he's one of them, or, or they deserve it. And there's all sorts of stuff. And it was just this really kind of nasty experience. And I remember walking out, and some guy even accosted me. He kind of punched me in the back. And he said, you know, I really take offense to what you said there. And I'm like, you know, you're thinking, you're like, well, what the heck did I just say? That was so offensive. And I remember going down and going back that night, and my wife was with me, and we were just like, oh, my gosh, what have we done here? We've moved into this – we've just recently moved to this community. And I didn't sleep at all that night. I was just so in, like spiritual turmoil, and I didn't sleep the second night. And I remember the third day I went back and I talked to my friend who was actually the one who had told me to pray to be of service, because right now I was sort of like wondering why the hell I had listened to him. But he said to me, he said, you prayed to be of service, did you not? And I said, yeah, I had. And he said, well, you may not realize it, but this is the training you asked for, or this is a service that you asked for, and right now you're being trained to become a better servant. And I think it was in that realization that I came to have a better appreciation for the training that comes through service. I remember because my friend said to me, he said, you know, maybe you know just a little bit about what it's like to stand up for righteousness and to be despised for it. And he said, maybe you'd know just a little bit about what it's like when Jesus was up there and standing up for righteousness and was reviled by many people. I think it was in all of that you recognize the value of these experiences and that they're important experiences, and even though they're tough and they're a struggle and a challenge, that, you know, in the universe scheme of things, there really are a great experience. And I think that's sort of kind of what transformed my life, from that challenging experience. And then from that, you know, I've really been able to kind of turn things around a bit, as you heard previously. Just in little ways, I still haven't found a solution for the high school, but it's been more spiritual victories than anything else.
Well, let me ask you something. So this high school that it needs renovating, well, first of all, is it currently being used? I mean, So there are kids going to that school.
Yeah.
So they're going to a school that's falling apart. I mean,
oh yeah.
So it's been falling apart for years, but there have still been people. So it just needs some maintenance, is what you're saying, essentially.
I mean, part of it's like 100 years old. I mean, we're about to lose our accreditation because of the shape, the physical condition of the school.
Wow.
Yeah. And the problem is that, being a small school, the state basically punishes you for being a small school, and we're trying to get bigger. Like, we've had to bring two towns together and put them in the same high school, and we've done that, and that's been a struggle in and of itself because you're getting these two towns that were once rivals, you know, like the Yankees and the Red Sox kind of a thing, and you're trying to get them to work together, and then you're trying to get them to spend money collectively to fix up this school that's falling apart. So there's a whole host of...
Have you thought about going... Have you thought about... so that people don't have to have their taxes raised. Have you thought about getting donations?
That just wouldn't cut it.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's just not enough money, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's too much, too big of a job to expect that you'd be able to do all of it that way. You know, Phil, I wanted to share with you. I had an epiphany once when I was younger, and you said, you know, you got up and thanked some people, and other people were offended by that. And sometimes it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to offend somebody. But I remember thinking to myself once, and I had been misunderstood like that. My intention had been totally misunderstood, and I was kind of feeling sorry for myself. And I was thinking, how can somebody have such good intentions and be so misunderstood?
Yeah.
And then the minute I thought that, I got this. I got, well... the one person that lived here that had the best intentions of anybody that ever lived here was also the most misunderstood.
Mm.
And in fact, nobody probably will ever hang you on a cross because they don't understand you. But they did it to him. And to the degree that you try to be like him, and he even told his apostles this, you're going to be misunderstood. The world didn't understand him, and it won't understand you. And it changed my whole perception. It's like, okay, I get it. You know, I can't hold up this light and not be misunderstood to some degree. But you got to keep holding it up.
Yeah,
and sooner or later, you know, and that's the service. And I think what you shared at the Boulder conference that really got to me. You said you were kind of lamenting this service you got yourself into.
Yeah,
and the word you got back was, "Can't you see how much you've grown?"
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I want to let you talk in a second, Phil. But it's funny, Paul. You're talking about being misunderstood. Really, I'm just glad you brought that up because I was having sort of an epiphany as we speak about this, because I think for a long time I felt misunderstood. And, you know, I think I said, well, what am I doing wrong? How come I'm being misunderstood by so many people? Or not so much by so many people, but by a vocal minority of people, at least in my life. There have been times that I've been betrayed. I think about this now, and I hope this doesn't come across as arrogant or self-righteous. I'm thinking, you know what? It comes with the territory. It probably means I'm following Jesus.
You know what? That was exactly the conclusion I came to, Andre, is that I shouldn't feel bad. In the end, the Master is on my side. You know, I mean, he understands. I have a friend in him because he was persecuted and he was misunderstood.
Right. In fact, Jesus even takes it further. He says, "Blessed are you when people swear all manner of evil against you falsely." When they, you know, so actually, it could mean that we're doing the right thing. You know?
Well, you know, I think the key thing, and this is probably the key thread for me in terms of service, that fundamentally service is about relationships.
Yeah.
Because no matter in what area you serve in, and, you know, I have my school thing, but everybody's going to have something different. The key thread in all of that is learning to love your fellows in what you do and being able to find ways to understand them, to show patience, you know, mercy, forgiveness, love, you know, but also this degree of selflessness where you're not being self-assertive. You know, you're recognizing the spirit within in all these other people. And I think that was, I think one of the things that most impressed me about the Master is that he was such a master of relationships. And one of the real values in service is that it so fundamentally helps you transform yourself to become better at those relationships so that you can truly find yourself not in just service to your fellows, but in loving service. Because at the end of the day, it's really not so much matters what you do, but how you do it, you know, how you serve your fellows with love. And I think that's what matters most to the people that you're serving and to God. And the funny thing about it is if you master those relationships, the service work becomes so much more easy to do. I mean, you still have the problems that are, you know, in front of you, but they're a lot easier to solve because you don't have this tension between relationships.
Well, you know, the other thing I wanted to just point out, Phil, is that, you know, I'll go back to the whole thing about being misunderstood, because I think it's something, it's really, you kind of got really thinking about this. I for a long time, you know, I was, from a young age, actually, I believed in the importance of open communication, and I believed, well, if I just told people what my intentions were and laid my cards on the table, you know, and honesty is the best policy, and if I just did those things, that, you know, that things would work smoothly for me, you know, and I realize now that, you know, there's situations where you just can't reason with people, you know, that you know, you could have the best intentions, you could be, you know, doing, you could explain to people what your motives are, you could, you know, you could be gracious and kind, but you still are going to be misunderstood by a certain group of people or a certain amount of people. And I think that one of the things that, you know, a good friend of mine, in fact, who's a Uranus book reader, said to me, he said, you know, I suspect you think you can talk your way through any situation. And I said, you know, you're probably right, I do. And he goes, you can't. And it was just funny because, you know, I guess one of my questions that I guess I want to kind of ask you is, did you find that to be true? Was your how would I put this? You talked about relationships. Was your ability to, you know, was your patience, was your love, were those things, have those things been tested in this whole situation, in this whole area of service? In other words, I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, I'm sure you probably had experiences where you've sat down with people and said, look, this is what I'm trying to do, and you thought that maybe they would understand, and they still didn't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's always sort of like this struggle and this challenge to get people to. I mean, just see, last week I was sitting in, you know, this one meeting explaining what was going on, and I noticed that one individual was just getting really frustrated and angry. And, you know, I think way back when I would have sort of just responded like anger with anger and just been like, you know, look, I'm doing all the work here, you know, I'm just, you know, kind of like trying to build a consensus here and explain to this, and, you know, and now I learned to take a step back and say, okay, why is he angry? You know, how can I serve this individual? And you know, can I meet with him privately? Can we do lunch? Can we do something like that? So you're constantly finding those ways to foster those relationships. And I think the big struggle that you have, I think, when you're of service to others, is to get to the point of understanding where sometimes the work is just not as important as the relationship. Because it's in the relationship that you're successful in the work. And a lot of times you can be so focused on like, oh, I got to get this done, I got to get this done. No, I just have to move forward. And through that pushing and just trying to make things happen, you end up forgetting about the relationships. And it's those relationships that are going to pull you through.
Hey, listen, you guys, we have a caller, too.
Just going to ask you about that, Paula. Go ahead.
How do? Hold on. This caller's been hanging on for a while, so I wanted to give the conversation a chance to get going, though, and so here we go. 707, you're on Blog Talk.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, Paula. Hi. Dr. Dave.
Hey, Dr. Dave.
You moved up. You moved back out north, like you said you were going
to. Back to the 707. Back to the 707.
Hey,
that's right.
You know, that was the name of a rock band, 707. Did you know that? They had a song called "I Could Be Good for You" back in the 80s. But anyway,
I don't know. You know what? That's interesting. I will look that up. Yeah. So we're back in Northern California. Very happily moved out on the Russian River, and
I've opened up a law firm and life is good, but I was really just calling just to listen this morning. I didn't have my computer, so I'm on my phone, so I was just, but very interesting this morning.
Well, hey, thanks for sharing the Yardbirds with us. I haven't heard that.
Well, I got to be honest, you guys have been talking about not being misunderstood, and that song has been rolling through my head. And then you guys were just talking about, I don't know, but it reminded me that I still think of in rock and roll that, like, if there was ever an angel or midwayer that just popped into our reality and kind of took advantage of his ability to manipulate time, it had to have been the most, like, inappropriately named rock star of all time, Norman Greenbaum, right? I found a friend in Jesus.
Yes.
How did you slip a song that's all about Jesus into the 60s rock scene and make it a number one hit? I don't know. But anyhow, good morning.
Thanks for this moment of levity.
Oh, yeah. The loving service theme, the last thought that rolled through my mind while I was listening to the last 45 minutes or so was that, you know, loving service, we all know what it means to be loving, but another adverb that I've slipped in there is joyful service, because...
Yeah. Yeah.
I think St. Francis has been a kind of a mentor in my life, so to speak. I went to St. Francis School. My older sister that died young was named Francine. My confirmation name is Francis. And about 2 years ago, I got a book on St. Francis that was written by this Scottish, can't remember his name. He was Scottish, and he was in the seminary. He dropped out of the seminary because he was disenchanted with the Catholic Church, and he ended up researching St. Francis and writing this very just... beautiful book on St. Francis that incorporated actual quotes from St. Francis, because even though he'd been my mentor my whole life, I knew nothing about St. Francis, but St. Francis had a sidekick, so to speak, who was the first, when St. Francis went through his craziness, and then he ended up at this little broken down church outside of Assisi, somebody came to him. They knew him, it was a friend of his, and he had, you know, been watching St. Francis freak out, go from wealthy merchant's son, who really went out on the town every night and spent lots of money with lots of friends, to this guy who was freaking out. He gave all his clothes away one night in a fit, traded clothes with a beggar and sat down with a beggar's bowl and all this kind of stuff. But now he's out in this church, so his friend shows up one day, and it turns out for all of St. Francis's life, this guy was like his number two guy. But towards the end of St. Francis's life, he was in the cave meditating with his... sidekick there, I'll call him his sidekick with no disrespect, and this guy really wanted some answers from St. Francis. Like, this guy had just devoted, I don't know, like 50 years of his whole life to St. Francis and all of this, and it had grown, and there was a, you know, Franciscan order had been formed and all this stuff, much to St. Francis's chagrin, I think, but anyhow, St. Francis was just not giving him a break. This guy wanted to know, like, what loving service was, so I think that was close enough to the question he was asking. And St. Francis said, finally, you know, he said, is it when you do this? And he laid out some scenario that he thought was loving service. And St. Francis is like, no, that's not loving service. No, that's not loving service. Finally, St. Francis said, loving service is when I walk, you know, from on my mission and I walk 20 miles in the freezing snow in my bare feet and I look down and my legs are, you know, blue and my shins are cut. And my robe is tattered and frozen, and I finally get back here to the order that I started, and I knock on the door, and some neophyte monk opens the door and says, we're not taking anybody new, and slams the door in my face. And he said, loving service is when I joyfully react to that situation. And I said, whoa. Biker Bill.
You know, if I could...
Sorry, I'm, whoa, hold on, Harley. I'm down at the coffee shop where I hang out. Biker Bill just started up his Harley, so anyhow.
If I could,
he's gonna come rolling by again real fast too. Hold on, I'm just gonna put this down for a sec. Okay. So anyhow, you guys are having a beautiful show this morning. Thank you for letting me join.
Well, thank you. And Phil, I think Phil is trying to get a comment in here. Phil, what were you going
to
say?
Yeah, I mean, if I could add to that, I mean, when, and I wanted to give shout outs to Susan Cook, who is the organizer. She was the, you know, the chair of the Commonwealth Service. When we sat down and said, you know, what are we going to have this conference about, we both kind of sat down and said, Michael, we lay this at your feet. You know, what is it that you want? And we just began talking. We kind of got the idea of we wanted to do about service. And then I mentioned something about the thrill of service. And then I think she had thrown in loving service. And I think the three words there go together there in the sense of the thrill of loving service, or it, as our caller just said, you know, the joy of loving service. Because I think at the end of the day, that's what just makes it all worthwhile, in the sense that you stop and you realize, you know, I may be getting beat up and I might be getting taking my licks, but I am really enjoying this, you know. And you know that there'd be this huge hole in your life if you stopped doing this area of service, because it just at the end of the day, it is fun. And I think it's that joyful attitude, or that sense of almost being a thrill seeker, that sort of like stimulates you and encourages you to take on these challenges and say, okay, what's next? You know, and I had said previously that, you know, it in a lot of ways we're being trained through service. And I think that's true, because I think what the Father wants is loyal servants to take care of, you know, greater estates than this. And so he's trying to develop and cultivate our servant attitude, so that we may be useful, Paula, as you had said, later on in this universe plan. And I think it's, you know, it's when you start taking that joyful attitude that, you know, wow, what am I going to learn next, you know, and what's the lesson in this story, that it really brings it together in a sort of like transformational experience, and it gives you this vision far beyond all the difficulties that may be facing you right up, you know, in your day-to-day experiences, to get a better understanding that we're all destined to serve in some greater capacity. And this is, these experiences are all leading towards that.
And you know, sometimes the rewards of service are immediate. Sometimes the rewards of service are immediate, just like when Jesus and Gadot spent an afternoon restoring a lost child to his home.
Yeah.
And you can imagine the joy on the mother and the child in the reunion, and the satisfaction that Jesus and Gadot felt when they brought about that reunion, and both parties were so, so grateful. Oh, boy, that feels so good to see the satisfaction and to feel the reward of that service immediately. But much of the service we do in this life won't be recognized in this life. And in fact, many times people who serve tirelessly in this life aren't recognized until after they're dead. I think Dr. Dave mentioned, and Dr. Dave, if you're listening, I had to mute it so that the noise level went down, but he mentioned that, you know, not being recognized for service. But you know, Jesus says to us, come to me if you labor and you're heavy laden, because I will give you rest. And we know we have a friend in him, and we know that our service is recognized on some level, and someday, the Master also said, lay up your treasures in heaven. Well, we know that someday we'll be able to look back and see some of the fruits of our service, so we'll get our rewards in another world. And it brings a quote to mind that I wanted to share, because it is about this idea of the rewards of service. You don't always see them immediately, and it's okay. You just have to keep in mind that there are always repercussions of every good thing that is ever done. And this is, I'd love to be able to tell you guys the paper and stuff, but I'm online, and so I don't see it. It's paper 71. I don't know the name of it. It's section 3, paragraph 9. I think it's development of the state is the paper. I'm not sure, though. It says, in advanced states, political service is esteemed as the highest devotion of the citizenry, the greatest ambition of the wisest and noblest of citizens is to gain civil recognition, to be elected or appointed to some position of governmental trust. And such governments confer their highest honors of recognition for service upon their civil and social servants. honors are next bestowed in the order named upon philosophers, educators, scientists, industrialists, and militarists. Parents are duly rewarded by the excellency of their children, and this is the part that kills me, and purely religious leaders, being ambassadors of a spiritual kingdom, receive their real rewards in another world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny. I wanted to say something to you, Phil, about, you were saying that you're talking about how sometimes service can be difficult, and that's true. Sometimes it can be. But I also think that it's important for us to remember that, you know, that Jesus said, you know, my yoke is easy, my burden is light, and that service isn't supposed to be a burden. You know, that's why you talk about how exciting it is and how enjoyable it is. You know, if we're not enjoying it most of the time, then something's probably not right. Either we should be doing some other kind of service, or our heart's not really in it. We need to reexamine what, you know, our motives. But I mean, you know, Jesus says, you know, as well, that it's a privilege, not a duty, to serve the Lord. And I also would take that a step further and say that just as your answer book says that relationships are ends in themselves, I mean, service is an end in itself. I mean, what is it? You know, you said we get trained through service. For what? For greater service, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're going to be doing that forever.
Exactly.
Andre, I think it's always enjoyable. I'm sorry, Phil. Go ahead.
Oh, no.
You know, I don't think Phil enjoyed having two sleepless nights. You know, you do grow through that, and it is a good thing, and the reward. My point is the reward isn't always immediate.
Yeah. I enjoy all those experiences now. I think at a certain point I didn't. Right when you're right in the middle of it. But to get back to your point, Andre, I think sometimes I go, you know, I don't want to abstract on my personal experiences and, you know, make gross generalizations. And I should be, you know, tempering with, you know, in my experiences, a lot of them have been struggles. But a lot of my experiences, too, and certainly with my, interfaith work in the community, there are just, like, truly pleasurable and enjoyable. And so I think you make a really valid point there. One thing I want to say, do we have another caller who is sitting on the line there?
Well, Christina is still on the line with us.
Perhaps she wants to jump in?
Thanks, Phil. I appreciate how you always make sure that I get to speak because I just listen so much. And the question that I had is I'm a public school teacher, and I have the months of June, July, and August off where I become real relaxed and centered, and now I'm trying to figure out how am I going to maintain that sense of peace and calm when I'm around, you know, over 500 students, and I get, you know, I get to touch the lives of all these young people, and I'm a real important figure in their lives, but I really struggle with large class sizes. Like last year I had a sixth grade class that was 32, and sometimes when we're teaching music, we'll actually combine two and three classes, so we'll have 90 or 100 kids at once. My question is, how do you prepare yourself when you know in advance about the stresses of your service work so that somehow you can maintain your sense of connection with God and your peace and your centeredness?
Boy, that is just, like, the best question because it's something that I struggle with and I'm struggling with right now.
Okay.
And first off, God bless you for, number one, being a teacher, and number one, being a teacher with that many students, because I go in and teach classes every once in a while just to, like, kindergartners and stuff like that, and I think I'm only dealing with 15, and it's enough to make you crazy sometimes, but as to, like, developing, like, the stillness and the balance, I think it's such a good point, and it's something that I struggle with constantly, and I don't think I've really found myself grounded yet, because I think that is, you know, that's sometimes, like, one of the challenges that comes in serving in these areas, which can be difficult, is that, you know, you become so focused in the work that sometimes your spiritual life can fall to the wayside. You know, a perfect example with me is just the stillness. You know, if I'm multitasking and either bouncing from my work or to these other several projects that I have on my plate, your mind gets kind of frazzled, and I think Rodin said it best, and I can't quote him exactly, but you know, it's what the master did, where he, you know, went off with his walks and to restore the stores of spiritual energy, you know, to find that ability to serve in a greater capacity. There is that great line that says, "Service is the inspiration of looking to the one for the service of the many." Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it is through worship and prayer and maintaining that really well-grounded spiritual life that allows you to serve in a greater capacity. And, you know, I wish I could speak more authoritatively on the successful aspects of it. And maybe Paula or Andre, you can speak to this. But I find it a real challenge. I find it a real struggle.
Well, you know, I think, again, Jesus said, and this is going back to what Andre said, and I don't want to take anything away from what Andre said about having joy in service, because certainly ultimately service is joyful. But service can be difficult, too, challenging service. I think, Phil, this is what you're getting at. The rewards are not always immediate there on the other side of it. But still, when you're going through it and you're being pummeled, Christina, when you have those 500 kids and they're clamoring for you and they all need something and you think you're at the end of your rope and you dig down deep for your patience and you say, and what did Jesus say? He said, "Come to me. Come to me. Those of you who are who labor and are heavy laden." What is that saying? That's saying, "Oh, Master, I'm becoming overwhelmed with the burdens of my service." So he's telling you, "Come to me, and I will give you rest, spiritual strength." Right? So in your contemplation, I mean, it's just like, you know, when I was saying earlier, I was feeling sorry for myself, and I thought of him. I came to him, and he gave me rest. He said, "Huh. Hey, listen, I know what it's like to be misunderstood. You're in good company."
Right, and I think a lot that, of... Go ahead.
That released the angst. And Phil, when you heard him say, "But can't you see how you've grown through this?" Didn't that release the angst you were feeling?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, when that burden gets heavy, that's when we come to him and we say, "Master, I feel weighed down with this." And he does give us strength. He lifts that up for us and shows us a new perspective about all of it, which keeps us going. And you know, then we go back with a more resolute heart. Sorry to interrupt, Andre.
Okay. I think part of what we struggle with, too, is expectations. You know, because it's like when I just realized today that, you know, I'm supposed to be misunderstood, you know, or shouldn't say that, I'm supposed to be, but, you know, it's not like, no, there was, you know, Jesus never promised that we wouldn't be misunderstood. You know, he didn't promise that it was going to be easy. So I think, you know, if we have the right expectations too, I'm not saying that automatically makes it easier, but I think it gives us, I think it does help with a sense of peace, you know, because I think part of the reason, it's like, you know, when you talked before, Paula, you quoted Earl Strider, says, you know, resistance is the thing that we do that prolongs the pain. You know, when we resist, when we, you know, so they say, "Why does it have to be this way? Why does it have to be so misunderstood? Why?" You know, instead of just recognizing that could be a sign that you're doing the right thing. You know, which again, that doesn't make the pain go away, but it makes it easier to deal with than when we're trying to resist it and say, you know, and we scream and curse and say, "God, why me? Why is it?" You know, on and on and on. And that's normal to a certain extent. Don't get me wrong. We had our lovely guest last week, Susan Isaac, who talked about her angry conversations with God. So that's not all a bad thing. But I'm just saying, I think part of I think what makes, and this is just beyond, it goes beyond just the service issue. I think part of what makes us depressed and upset is that we think life is supposed to be different. You know, we think, well, it's not supposed to be this way. You know, and there's some of that. There's some truth in some of that, because I think there are certain things that happen on our planet that shouldn't have happened, like the Lucifer Rebellion, you know, or the default of Adam and Eve. But even there, in some ways, that's also part of the plan, you know, because we live in a universe of free will, and, you know, and God knew that imperfect beings were going to abuse their free will. He knew that. But, you know, freedom is, I'm really getting off on a tangent, but the point I'm making, though, is simply that I think, you know, it's like when Jesus says, "Expect less of some people and you'll be less disappointed." And I think also, you know, if we look at our worldview and we ask ourselves, you know, what do I expect out of this world? What do I expect out of this planet? What do I expect from the Father? And adjust our expectations to suit reality. I think that's another thing that really helps.
Yeah, you know, I think that we just have to keep going with it. We have to have faith that sooner or later what we give to the world of value has value and will create goodness somewhere. I mean, and, you know, I think, you know, Jesus said, lay up your treasures in heaven, for where your treasures are, there will your heart be also. Well, you know, then I think, okay, Master, what are the things that I get to take with me? You know, certainly you're telling me not to lay up temporal treasures. I don't get to take those with me. But what are the things that are eternal? Relationships, experiences?
Yeah.
Those I get to keep.
Yeah.
Nobody, nothing can ever take those away from me.
Yeah,
and
I'll give you a big amen on that. That's right on.
Yeah, and so that, you know, you may, like Phil, you know, the service that you've done for this community, someday you'll meet a kid, you know, in heaven, a person, not a kid necessarily, but a person who somehow benefited from this service, and you had no way of even knowing they would have benefited from it. And they will thank you, you know, because they will know. Because of something you did, it made it possible for them to have an education in a school of the in the school in their town, you know. We just can't see all the ramifications of the good things we do, but we have to have faith that if we do good things, there are ramifications. And that's, you know, that's the where faith comes in, because we don't always get immediate rewards for our service, but we have to trust that there are rewards for everyone. And certainly I'm not speaking in a selfish sense. I'm speaking in, you know, because I don't know about you guys, but one of my constant prayers has always been, Father, you know, what can I do? Let me make a difference. However great, however small, doesn't matter. Whatever I can do, let me just do that thing well and help who I can help. And, you know, because I really believe that if we can serve in our little sphere, whatever it is, you know, then we're making a difference. It's like that great quote of the caveman page. If you love a new person every week or every month or every year, and if this is the best you can do, then you're certainly socializing and spiritualizing your personality.
Yeah, and you know that socialization of our personalities, I think it gets back to the relationships that I was talking about. As well, you know, I think it's just, it really is just the opportunity of loving your fellows. That's, I think, the most important thing. And, you know, I talked about in my previous speech in Boulder is that really what's great about service is that it gives you an opportunity to be out there among your fellows, and it gives you an opportunity for let them to see, you know, Jesus living again in your own life.
Right.
I think that's the struggle that we've kind of faced right now, you know, getting back to really continuing to preach the gospel or share the gospel and the advanced teachings of this revelation. We need to be out among people, and it's not enough for us anymore just to proclaim the truth. We also have to live it.
Mm, yeah.
And I think the great thing about service is that it gives you that environment in which they can see spiritual living. You know, it's more than just knocking on somebody's door, or standing on the street corner and proclaiming the truth. It's actually living the truth in service to your fellows. And I think that's kind of where we are right now in this age of the planet, especially when you kind of look at all the demands and the struggles that our planet is going through. You know, everything from, you know, broken down families, to, you know, dysfunctional government, in a lot of ways, society has reached the limits of its just evolutionary growth without the assistance of spirit-led men and women to come forth and serve in these areas. And there is just such abundant area where we can do that and render these services, these material services, which are very important, but not, you know, as the Urantia book says, not to take away from the chief importance of leading other people to God and a greater understanding of the kingdom of heaven and the spirit within and the brotherhood of man. But what I find is interesting is that it seems to me that service, you know, we talked about spiritual economy or before, it gives you an opportunity to do both things. And that's why I think, you know, I gave a sermon a little while ago. I kind of called it that the age of service is upon us. And I do feel that there is a new age upon us. And I sort of interpret it as the age of service, because I think it's the next step in how do we move forward and get this struggling society or struggling planet on track to moving towards light and life. And I think it's through service, you know, the service of loving our fellows and the service of rendering these spiritual and material services.
A talk show host said last night, and I was just absolutely thrilled to hear him say it, whatever made us think that profit was the only motive for doing what we do? When did we get this idea that everything has to be for profit? Why can't certain things be for service? Like healthcare, why must everything be for profit? And I thought, wow, it just thrills me when I hear somebody say that might be heard by millions of people, because obviously the book tells us the profit motive simply must be replaced by the service motive.
Well, and I think, you know, if I just to add, to kind of qualify that, I actually think that even if you're doing something for profit, you can still be of service. I mean, there doesn't have to be a dichotomy between those two things. You can make a profit and still have a service motive. I mean, you mentioned healthcare. I mean, you know, even doctors today, you know, there are good doctors who are doing it, you know, and are making money at it, but you know, they're still good doctors and they still serve. So I think there can be a I know that Mo Siegel has talked a lot about, you know, being of service in business. So I do think that it's possible to have both. You know, you can make a profit and still be of service. But I guess the issue to me in that whole thing is, what's your motive? You know, if your only motive is profit, then you're barking up the wrong tree.
Well, and I think that's what's happened to a lot of corporations, and in the Western civilization, profit has become the all-riding factor that you know, we have to serve the shareholders. It's not about giving to the end user. It's about the shareholders ultimately, and we have to make profit. That's the bottom line, and it's just driving a big machine. But sometimes it feels like the big machine is driving right off the cliff. So I love to hear that. But Phil, something you said, you know, really made me think about, you know, a couple things about service. Oftentimes we get overwhelmed. You know, Christina mentioned 500 students. That can be an overwhelming situation. And sometimes the level of service we're called to do is difficult. And as Jesus said, you know, the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he will send more laborers into the field. You know, we've all experienced these things. But I think that Jesus, you know, we use Jesus as the example. The book tells us he was never in a hurry, and he had time to comfort his fellow men as he passed by. And then it also says most of the really important things which Jesus said or did seemed to happen casually as he passed by.
Yeah.
And I love that, because in a way it just liberates us to say, okay, Master, you know, I'm not going to go out and try to create this great service opportunity for myself. I'm just going to say to you, I want to serve. Whatever opportunity you bring to me, as I pass by, I'm going to do my best to do that service.
You guys, I need to step away for just a second. I'll be right back. So
yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right there, Paula. I think you know, fundamentally, and I said before, it doesn't really matter what you do. It's more cultivating that attitude of being of service and saying, Father, I am available to do what you will. You know, and, you know, as I said previously, I really had no idea that working in the school system was the service opportunity for me. And it really is sort of just faithful living where you're like, huh, let's see what opportunities are coming my way. And, you know, for the folks who are listening out there, or, you know, say that there's, you know, a single mom with like three kids and she's saying, you know, well, what can I do? You know, it's just having the attitude of service, and God is going to take you in your station in life and use you where you are. And it may be that God's just going to work with you in raising your children or ministering to, say, another single mom who's in the same situation. It's just that availability to say, I'm ready, put me to work. Mm-hmm. And I think the key thing in all of that is just constantly being aware of those opportunities when they come by. You know, and I think that's when you said Jesus was never in a hurry. I think he was always sort of patiently waiting and saying, huh, is this something that the Father is sending to me? Is this an opportunity? And in a way, it becomes like this cosmic game. You know, you're like, huh, I'm sitting down next to this person on the airplane, you know, and they're reading a book on the universe or something like that. You know, what's going on here? And you start saying to yourself, well, let me find out. And you start a conversation, you just build a relationship and see if something transpires from that. And a lot of times it does.
And, you know, oftentimes, Phil, when, you know, if we're in the vein of serving as we pass by, and we've asked to be of service like you did, and you make a sincere prayer and you say, Father, I just want to serve. Let me be of service. What can I do to help? Show me how I can help. You know, I've told the Heavenly Father, open the door and I'll walk through. Just help me see that it's you opening the door. And I promise I'll walk through that door of service, whatever it is, whatever you have in mind. And so that the secondary prayer is just, please help me see it, is to say, get my judgments out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Don't let me be stopped from serving by prejudice that, oh, well, but not that person. That's
yeah.
not what I had in mind.
I've done that many a time. I'm just like... You know, you kind of get the sense of that this is what the Father wants you to do, and you're like, you want me to do what? You know, and it's funny because a good friend of mine says that sometimes when you're out there being a service, you know, as you pass by, he says sometimes you just need some big cojones, you know, just because, you know, it takes some, I think the good word is they describe, I think Jesus once as being spiritually aggressive or socially aggressive. I think in a good way, in that he was willing to go out there and make contact with these people. And, you know, even like they say, like the young man who was afraid, you know, and he said, you know, since you asked me for your help, you know, and he was very adamant in making contact with these people. And,
you know, that's such a good point, too, because he is such a, just his life is such a total paradigm shifter. You know, you can imagine what it was like, for instance, for the apostles to be sitting there listening to a profound discourse by their, you know, their master, and he stops everything and goes and ministers to some old woman in the street.
Yeah.
And she's a woman, you know, and B, she's old, and you know, and C, you were talking to us. And now you're out there ministering to her. And who's she? But I think we learned that for him, there was nobody unworthy of God's love. Nobody.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Ganad was surprised when he didn't enlist the thoughtless pagan into a conversation. In his wisdom, he knew that the pagan wasn't ready to hear what he had to say, but we all know that if the pagan had been ready, Jesus would indeed have enlisted him into a conversation.
Yeah, and it's that spiritual connection that I think essential with this service, you know, these service opportunities, you really have to be dependent on God, and you have to be listening, because, you know, a lot of times you can, it helps you avoid some of these mistakes, because I think when you get in that service attitude, I want to be available, I want to do stuff, you start looking for opportunities to be of service, and you need that divine wisdom and that omniscience and divine insight from the Father to be able to say, okay, this is worthy of your time here, and you know, or you know, you don't need to worry yourself with this circumstance, you know. I find that increasingly, you know, as you go about serving, you have to say, Father, is this where you want me to be?
Right, and you know, the secondary aspect, and for certainly. Still, for me, service is, and just what you pointed out, it's relationships. It's all about relationships. I mean, it's relationships with groups, as you with the school board, with groups of Urantia book readers that we both serve. It's relationships with individuals and with, you know, the Urantia book, for instance, says parenthood is a lifelong service ministry.
Yeah.
That the wise child will come to love and appreciate. So, you know, maybe not until they're 30, but they will come to love and appreciate it. And it is, as any parent knows, a lifelong service ministry. You don't your desire to serve your children does not go away just because they're 35 or 40 or whatever. And so it's really all about relationships, because if there were nobody else on this planet, then there would be nobody to serve, and it would be a moot point. Humans tend to isolate themselves, and the another thing the Urantia book says about what Jesus did with the apostles, oftentimes when, you know, he would take them out to engage in some form of service, and that would give them rest, you know, and that would get, you know, rather than going off and meditating and whatever, you know,
yeah,
he would take them out to engage in service, and you know, oftentimes when people get into their own head and just all wound up in a knot about what's going on in their own lives, if they get out and go serve somebody, like, you know, our good friend Mo Siegel will say, go push a book cart through the hospital, or I've found great joy in praying with street people, you know.
Yep.
It's not an easy thing to do as a woman because you're vulnerable, but if you can get a partner, go down to the mission and just offer to pray with people, my gosh, you can't believe how much they benefit from that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or stand in a soup line and serve people, you know, you really do. It does make you feel good, and it makes you feel better about your situation, and, you know, and not just like getting
on. Connected, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Connected. And, you know, we do tend to, when we're isolated, it's a dangerous thing to isolate ourselves from our fellows, and not to where we're not being of service to anybody then but ourselves. And, you know, that's just the richness of the fabric of our lives, whether we're serving our family or our friends. You know, I often think that you don't necessarily have to go stand in a soup line. But, you know, the other thing that we were talking about is being open to those cues that come in from the Heavenly Father. Like, so many times when I've been downhearted and I've prayed, Father, give me, you know, help me, some dear friend has called me and helped me sort things out, and that alone is such a magnificent service. They always tell me, invariably they tell me, you know, I was just going about my day and I had this strong urge to call you.
Yeah.
So, and I know, you know, when we pray, oftentimes it's got one of God's children that answers our prayers. We're, you know, it doesn't come in some miraculous the clouds part and the light comes down. It's some dear friend that calls at a moment of need, and that's the answer to a prayer, because God is in them, and they're making themselves available to perform a loving service. So, I know,
yeah.
I digress. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. No, quite all right. Actually, I was curious. Christina, are you still there?
Yeah, I wanted to say something about this pianist that I've been working with. Her husband has just started working with a company that has them take Friday afternoons off to go volunteer in the community. And I was so amazed to hear that because it's a bank. And they think it's really important that every Friday afternoon that they go out and do these different things. So I was looking up and seeing what they've done. One was they were helping Sandbag up in Fargo when they had the flooding. And it's really kind of an amazing thing that they would just empty out the office and have all these people just go out in the community and do things. And he just loves doing it. And it's such a – I just think we are – seeing the change from the profit motive to the service motive, that the more that companies talk about the service that they're offering, that it's starting to happen. It's really slow. It's really gradual. But I am such an idealist, and I really believe that we will make that transition. We're starting in small ways right now.
Well, certainly we've learned some lessons the hard way about, just being all about profit doesn't work, really.
It would be really interesting because fundamentally when you talk about service and when you talk about love, and I think in a lot of people's minds they're this idealist thing, and so certainly they are, but on a very realistic level, the most practical thing that exists. I mean, if you look at that bank and the folks that go out and serve in that bank, I would wonder what that does for the relationships of everyone who works in that bank. And, if they just didn't serve at all and just went about their day, working for that bank, I think there might become like a certain level of drudgery or just lack of meaning in their life. And then here the bank says, let's go out and serve our fellows. And what that must do just to the morale of that group working together and to the relationships that, it's seen as sort of like a sort of idealistic thing, and from a profit level, you're like, well, why would you do that? But the fact of the reality is that there's probably so many benefits and rewards for that company to do that. And I think that's the problem that we have to sort of overcome and take these ideals of love and service and make them show them that there's also a practical side to this as well as a spiritual and idealistic side. My big thing working in the, because I also interact with my legislators in the state of Vermont, is I'm trying to get my legislators to recognize the dangers of having a parental government in the sense that we have a government that is increasingly taking on the responsibilities of our citizens, from
that, you know what, I got to stop you for a second, Phil, because you're singing my song here. I got to tell you, I am a consummate libertarian. I that's what we call the nanny state.
Yeah, well, and we're the poster child for that. And I think the reality is, and this reality that's hitting so many states is that they've become so burdened with their state budgets because they're trying to take on all these responsibilities and doing them, when the reality is that this is the rightful domain. It's the privilege and the right of the citizens to take on these service opportunities.
Absolutely.
There's so many areas in government and in society that we can serve, and we can take away a lot of these responsibilities from the government and in the process gain this benefit that comes from serving in this spiritual capacity. And I think that that's a great thing that's happening right now in terms of like the bankruptcy of a lot of these state governments.
Absolutely.
They're going to be forced to say,
that's right,
you know what, our citizens have to step up to the
plate.
That's
right. You are so singing my song here, and I don't like to get too political on the show, but Paul and I both express our political opinions sometimes, so I'll go ahead and just say this. Not in a partisan sense. I'm not going to talk about any individuals or candidates, but I think that I've said this before. I said this on one show in the past that, frankly, I think that this whole thing we've been doing since the New Deal is wrong, this whole idea of government being involved in the social service industry, because for the very reasons you've given. I mean, Phil, let me tell a story that I've told on the air before, but this just so it drives home the point that you're making. You know, a lot of people complain about the welfare state, and they complain about how, you know, what the effect that it has on the poor and how, you know, it makes people ungrateful because they feel entitled. And all those things are true. But I think what people also forget is what effect is this having on people like you and I who are supposed to be called to service, okay? I mean, we're all called to service.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is what not only does it have a bad effect on the receiver, but it has a bad effect on the giver. Because what's going on here? What's going on here is what we're seeing. And by the way, America is still the most charitable nation on earth. One of the most charitable nations. We have more charity than they do in Europe. And I think one of the reasons for that is because in Europe they're so used to the government doing all this stuff for them that they don't think about doing it themselves. But even so, even though we're more charitable, I'm concerned about the erosion of charity because. I'll give you an example of one that happened. I used to go a few years ago. I used to belong to a church that was it was an Anglican church, and it was full of uppity rich white folks. Okay, we're talking multimillionaires, and they took some refugees in from Rwanda. Okay, and I'm glad they did that. God bless them. That's wonderful. Okay, but here's what really concerned me. They're probably, and by the way, these were not just strangers. Okay, these were people that the Bishop of Rwanda, the Anglican Bishop of Rwanda, had referred, you know, to this church, and these people were people that the Bishop, you know, said, look, these guys are good people. These families are good families. They're good folks. You can take them in. There probably were about a dozen people at that church that could have housed these people, about a dozen families. Okay, but you know what they did instead? They said, oh, we'll get you on Section 8. We'll get you on public housing. You know, we'll get you, and they can justify it. They figure, well, my taxes go for it, so why not? And what really concerns me, Phil, it's really interesting because a lot of people will say that I'm an individualist because I don't want government involved in all this stuff. But actually, I think the more government gets involved in these things, the more self-centered and individualistic we become. Because what ends up happening is, you know, yeah, we'll throw money at the poor, but we don't want to get our hands dirty. We don't, you know, if people actually were because we have such a government safety net that people don't think about as much about, you know, actually directly helping the homeless person. And don't get me wrong, I realize there are risks. I'm not saying that we can trust everybody. There are people out there that will take advantage of you, and you know, as Jesus calls them, I think he calls them professional parasites or something like that. I realize there are people like that. But, you know, what an opportunity here we're missing, I think. And I think you're right. I think that maybe one of the best things that could happen to this country, and hopefully be controversial here, is for a lot of these government service agencies to go bankrupt, because I think this is going to force people to wake up and say, hey, you know, we've got to, you know, there's nothing like a crisis to wake people up. There's nothing like a crisis to get people to say, you know what, it's our responsibility to serve. It's our you know, it's the responsibility of the churches. It's the responsibility of individual citizens. And so I'm really glad you brought this up. And
let me interject something here, Andre.
Okay.
Countries that don't help the poor end up being third world countries. And if that's where we want to go, where the rich have everything and the poor have nothing, then that's probably where what you're talking about will lead. And I think that for us, our tendency as human beings to be black and white, either or, it's this or that. It's, you know, I'll give you an example, government on a neighboring planet. Resources are not considered owned by anybody. They're held in public trust. They're held in public trust. They're considered belonging to everybody. Now, some people would call that socialism. So, you know, I think there's a balance. And what's wrong with our world? Well, it's whacked out. It's either one extreme or another. It's always either or, but not both and. And it's both and where we find our balance. You mentioned throwing money at people, and I know Phil will probably agree. There's been some comments on the board, Phil, about how bad your state is in the sense you were talking, just being bankrupt, trying to help people and not being able to do it. But we really have to find a way to strike a balance between what's right and what's good and what's needed. And it doesn't help to throw money at the poor. You know, Jesus didn't do that. I mean, even when the sick, you know, the apostle took him out there and said, oh, Master, look how sick and how suffering they are. Can't we please heal them? And the Master said, well, they would like that, wouldn't they? And that would certainly be of benefit to them, but no, we're not going to heal them. Many of them are here because of years of riotous living. And they're sick because they deserve to be sick. But what we will do for them is we will preach the good news to them. So he didn't say, no, we're not going to minister to them at all.
Right, right, right.
He said, no, we will. We're not going to heal them. We're not going to try to solve their material problems completely, but we will try to encourage them and help them in another way. And I think that, you know, he is obviously the model of balance in that. And Jesus also said, you know, a radical thing. Jesus said, he who will not work will not eat.
Yeah, and Paul, by the way, Paul quotes that in the Bible. So actually, that comes. I don't know if that actually, if Jesus actually said that, or
it's
if that's
a proverb,
something, or if the Revelators put Paul's words in Jesus' mouth. I don't know.
No, it's. I think it's an old Jewish proverb, but Jesus reiterated it. He who will not work will not eat. So I think, you know, in our social service, whatever it is, you know, throwing money at anything does not help. But being wise and really looking at what causes problems and trying to find logical and loving ways to serve, you know, it's what Phil's talking about. For instance, Phil, your example of the school, I think it's a great example. You could go out and try to get philanthropists to fund the renewal of that school. But ultimately, that isn't going to happen. And in the end, many hands make light work. If you could get enough, you know, if we want to have a nice school, we're all going to have to pay a little bit for that. And I'm sorry, everybody's overtaxed, it's true. But if we want to have a nice school and we want our children to go in a school that the roof's not falling in, we're all going to have to pitch in a little bit. And that's the hard reality of it, folks. Come on.
Well, let me, you had talked about like it's a both and it's about finding balance. And I do want to kind of return back just to the spiritual aspects of service, but let me see if I can just kind of tie in both those thoughts and then bring in the Urantia book. Fundamentally, and from a political perspective, you have Republicans and Democrats who, in general, gross generalization, Republicans believe in minimalistic government, whereas the Democrats are much more oriented towards a government that renders social services. Now, I think the reality is, and this is always the case, I think, when there's such a wide divergence, is that the answer is found in the balance. And I think what has to happen at least in this country, is for us to find a ways where we minimize the activities or affairs of government by calling on the people to serve and minister to these needs that the government is trying to solve. And so in a way, what has to happen is what they talk about in the Urantia book, where the government becomes a coordinator.
Yeah, instead of a regulator. Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's a great idea.
Very
yeah.
good, yeah.
And I think there is that answer in there, somewhere in the sense that, you know, finding the wisdom to say, look, These needs need to be met, and they need to be supplied by the government. But all these sort of needs over here, they need to be served by the citizenry of this state. And I think if we do that, what we're doing is we're fostering the conditions to create a responsible citizenship that is, in turn, as that evolves, is going to create a citizenry that's less dependent on the government for many things. So I don't know if that sort of...
Well, I mean, I guess I shouldn't apologize for getting political on the show, because the Urantia book talks about political issues.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I don't want to...
Sure.
I don't want to... You know, as long as we don't get partisan here. But I think that... I'll give my bias here. I think this is sort of what George Bush was trying to do, although I think he didn't do it very well. And when he called compassionate conservatism, I think it's a good idea. The problem is that what I think we should be doing is, what about the idea of government empowering private charity, rather than saying, in other words, Well, I mean, we can talk about, and I don't know, you know, how you feel about this bill. You know, this could get into things like a voucher system for private schools, or it could get into things like, you know, instead of, for example, instead of the government taking care of all the needs of the poor, you know, delegating some of that to private charity and giving them, you know, grants or giving vouchers to people who, you know, could use a church service ministry, or, you know, some other kind of private ministry that can actually take care of these people's needs, you know, maybe better than a bureaucracy, but where the government just kind of coordinates that rather than tries to micromanage it. Is that sort of what you have in mind?
All I have in mind right now is just those ideals of bringing them two together and how they manifest themselves. You know, I think there's probably a lot of different ways. I think it's kind of in the spirit of that ideal of a coordinating body, government serving as a coordinating body. Not to avoid the answer, but I think, you know, that may be part of the solution there.
Another way of putting that is that the government should be a facilitator, maybe, rather than a regulator. But
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, we've been
no,
all
there's
over the place
key
today,
things
so.
That we could do to reform government and on every level, our own government, and you know, I'm sure we all have a lot of ideas, and I think a lot of people, you know, it's always interesting to me. We're talking about service. We know that our elected officials go in and they call themselves public servants, right? They call themselves public servants, but would you say what they're doing is service, really?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about. I mean, there are, you know, there are all these people call themselves civil servants.
Yeah.
I think some of them are, and some of them probably aren't. So,
in the truest sense of service, are they serving?
I can only speak to the legislators that I know in my state government, and I think there's a lot of similarities in other states. I think because society has become so complex, and there's so many complicated issues, that these guys are just completely overwhelmed. And I know that's true in Vermont. And I think there's a lot of men and women who serve, and they truly are public servants. But they're overwhelmed by the demands that are being placed on them by the government, and by the citizenry. The one thing I think that is lacking in there is wisdom. And I just think that only that wisdom has really one true source, and that comes from God. And so I would say that they perhaps, if they're not serving in partnership with God in what they do, they're severely limited. So perhaps in that sense, they're not fulfilling their highest duty as public servants. Because I sure know if I was in that position, I'd be down on my knees praying to the Father to help me to serve in this, and angels, really, to serve in this greater capacity.
Well, and I do think that, you know, in a sense, they are serving. I don't mean to insinuate. I'm not implying that they're not. I do think they are. And I do think that, for instance, I think that the President of the United States is probably one of those great those jobs that is the most difficult and the most thankless. And nobody appreciates what they go through. I've watched every president in my life age severely in office.
Yeah.
Every president I can remember went into office looking pretty young and spry and came out looking old and haggard. And that should tell you something. I remember a commentary I heard years ago. It was a good local commentator. His name was Gene Amel. And it was in an election year, which I think election years are hard on all of us. My gosh, they're hard on me. I know that. And Gene was saying, what we need in there is a man who will do this and do that. And he went on with this whole list of things of what we need in there. And then he ended with saying, what we need in there is a man who's too darn smart to want that job.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I have to think about that. You know, oftentimes, you know, I got to go back to John Kennedy saying, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. And I think that this is, you know, since we're talking about service, how many of us ask the simple question, how can I help?
Yeah.
How can I help? I don't mean to just sit here and be an armchair quarterback and criticize everything you're trying to do. How can I help? And I think if more people just said that, it wouldn't matter if it's on their hospital board, on their school board, on their community, on their HO, homeowners association, on their, in their local communities, in any way, if they just saw a need somewhere, because their need is everywhere, and said, how can I help? Then things would quickly change.
I think that's the attitude of the servant. You know, I think that's it in its essence. It's just what can I do? Just let me know, and that's probably how it starts out. You know, and from there, I think your service opportunities just build and get bigger and bigger. Because certainly, you know, if you ask to help once, you're going to get asked to help again.
And if you show that you are willing to help,
yeah,
certainly people are going to ask you to help because they know you're willing. You know, just the fact that you're willing is such a relief that when people know that you're willing to help, they don't have to beg you or cajole you or, you know, try to trick you or whatever it is. You're willing. You're there. You're say. You've shown. You're present, and you've said, how can I help? And sometimes, you know, the servants that are willing do get overwhelmed because, just like Jesus said, the harvest is plenty and the laborers are few. Everybody, many people that I've noticed are willing to tell you how to do that. And if I was you, I would do this, 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 and this. And I wouldn't do it that way.
Yeah.
I would do it this way. And you're off base. And that's what I mean by armchair quarterbacking. They're willing to show up to give lip service. But when it comes to really, you know, and I think, Andre, you alluded to this too, with the people who were willing to throw money at something, and any one of them could have invited one of those souls into their home. But that's another level of service, and that takes a real commitment.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, Mo told me that he and Jennifer went on, when they first got married, they went on a world tour, and they met Mother Teresa in India. At the time, he was a member of Young Presidents Organization. And it was actually Jennifer that told me this story. Here's all these YPOs and their wives sitting in this audience, and Mother Teresa is addressing all of them, and she said, many times people ask me, how can I help? What can I do, Mother Teresa, to help you in your ministry? And Jennifer said, at that moment, you could hear all this rustling. People were getting out their checkbooks, right? They were getting out their checkbooks, and you could hear it in the audience. Everybody was getting ready to give money. And Mother Teresa said, no, put your money away. I'm not talking about giving money. You want to know how you can help. Go home to your companies and treat your employees like they are good people. Treat your employees the way they deserve to be treated, with dignity and respect. Make their lives better. That's how you can help.
Well, and I think, too, I think, you know, there are times, you know, I'll be honest with you, I really, really inspired me, Phil, because I'm going to start praying to the Father for greater service. I actually did that a few months ago, and I ended up getting an answer to my prayer, but it ended up blowing up in my face in some ways. But, again, maybe that was a good thing, too. So, but the thing that I wanted to talk about, is you mentioned Mother Teresa, Paul, and I think Mother Teresa is a great example of, you know, how Jesus treated people as he passed by. Because what did she say? She keeps saying this over and over. We can't do any great things. We can only do small things with great love. And I want to ask you a question, Phil. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of us feel like, well, maybe I'm not serving enough, and I should be doing this and this, and I should be, you know, involved in this community activity. And I'm not saying that those things aren't good. They are very good. But don't you think that in a lot of ways that we actually serve in all kinds of small ways without even thinking about it? A lot of times we do it, and we I'm not saying that we should, you know, be patting ourselves on the back, but I mean, or giving ourselves all kinds of credit. But there probably are a lot of ways that we may be beating ourselves up sometimes. Saying, I should be of greater service, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive for that. What I'm saying is, don't you think there are a lot of ways in which we serve? It's like for example, you mentioned, raising your family is one. I guess what I'm saying is there are a lot of ways in which we serve informally, and we don't even realize we're doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there is just an infinite number of ways to serve. And, I think I have to be careful. You know, I talk about my experiences, and I talk about a lot of stuff that I learned from my experiences. Those are just my experiences. And every person's life, is ultimately unique, and they're in these different areas and stages. I mean, I have a good friend of mine. He's a ranch book reader. He is just trying to get his career on track and on target, and he's just like, it's my job. I have to do it. You know, I really need this job, and so that's his focus. And I'm like, look, that's your station in life. That's where you need to be, and that's what you should be doing. But here's the thing. I know because he's what he's learning in his work. He develops seminars and teaching and training, and he knows this too. That I know that he is being developed in his serviceability, in his work, because of these experiences he's going to go through, that I know the Father is going to take those experiences and that knowledge and that training and put it to use somewhere else where, you know, it's perhaps a more spiritual project, something more that he truly yearns to do. And I think that's so true with all of us. Keep in mind, I keep on saying that we have this destiny to serve, and we're really just being trained to serve right now in this life. An interesting little thing to do is that if you all think back tonight or maybe in prayer about all of your life up to this point, and you start recognizing, boy, I think I went through that experience so I could do this, or I learned to do something over here. I mean, the first conference that I ever put on was in high school. We had this thing called Human Rights Day, and it's the students got all these speakers come and speak on human rights topics, and the whole school shut down, and we just sat in these workshops for the whole school day. I look back, and I was just like, oh, there's a reason I was doing that. And so, when you talk about, serving in, all these unconscious ways, I absolutely think so. I think the Father, they say the adjuster has a plan for you, and they're putting that plan in motion. And, I think the cool thing about service is a lot of times those plans become more apparent as you serve, because you're like, you say to yourself, well, look where I am right now. Look what I'm doing right now. And you start seeing the thread of that plan that seems to be the work of the Father and Michael and the angels. So, yeah, absolutely. I think you can serve in so many different capacities and being conscious or unconscious of it.
Jesus said that in a way, something that reminds me of what you just said, Phil. He said, some occupations are not holy and others are secular, but all things are sacred in the lives of mortals.
Yeah, I think he says all work is sacred. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so I think that you can be of service in any occupation, anywhere you are. With any, service is not something that you say, okay, now I'm going to go be of service. I'm going to go stand in a soup line, and that's my service. No, you can be of service while you're working. You can be of service while you're standing in the line waiting for the checkout person to check you out. There's service opportunities everywhere, in every way, with your family. My mother-in-law used to say, charity begins at home. And I always thought about that. She's so right. Many people will go out and embrace a homeless person, but have no kindness to give the person in their own family.
Yes, that's a very big problem. I've seen that a lot. In fact, it happens with a lot of, it's a big problem. You hear a lot of Christians talk about this too. A lot of men in particular, they go out and they have these ministries and they neglect their wives and kids. And it's a real sad thing.
Yeah. You know, it, service really begins wherever you are, and I think that's how Jesus was able to serve as he passed by, and what was so beautiful about that, really, you know, that service that he performed as he passed by. And you know, the admonition to pray for service, you know, Phil, I have to share with you because of what you shared about the voice saying to you, can you see how much you've grown? We don't often think that we get a literal answer to a prayer, but often we do, and we hear it, and it's deeply, deeply insightful and meaningful. And it, I was talking to a longtime Urantian friend just the other day, and I was talking about the last two decades of my life, from the moment that I told Jesus I wanted to be of service. I made that prayer, and I felt like ever since that moment I've been in a big river, and the river is moving very fast, and it's swift, very, very swift, and it's all I can do to stay upright in the current. And this is the analogy that comes to me every time I think about my life. And every once in a while, they let me go over to, there's a little quiet spot in the river, and it's a quiet little eddy, and it takes me over to the shore. And they let me climb out of my little craft, and I lay on the shore for a while, and they let me rest, but not for long. And then I'm back in the river again, and the current is just raging. And I was describing this to my friend who had a similar experience where she asked to be of service. And she made a very sincere prayer to be of service. And she got thrown in the deep end too. And she said she was lying on her back in bed, tears streaming down her face, and she was telling the universe, I don't want to do this. Yeah. I can't do this. It's too much. I'm overwhelmed. And she said a booming voice came in the room and said, you are part of a mighty current moving on this planet. You can't change your mind now. And she said, I immediately said, okay. I'm done, I won't. I'm with you. I'll get through this. And, you know, that touched me. Her sharing that with me touched me because I feel the current. I felt it. Again, you know, this planet is in a dire place. I don't think we realize how crucial it is to be cut off from the universe circuits, to be isolated. And how much better our whole situation would be if that weren't the case, but it is what it is. And they need us humans to step up. They can't do it without us.
Yeah, I guess maybe I sort of have a more positive way of restating the same thing, which is that rather than looking at our planet as being a dire, I think our planet is destined for something special because, you know, I mean, well, not just because Jesus came here, but, you know, why did Jesus come here? Because the last shall be first, you know?
Because we needed him the most.
I'm sorry?
We needed him
the
most.
Yes, absolutely. But I also think we have an opportunity, because we're such Agon daughters, we have an opportunity, I think, to... I mean, look, the Havona natives are jealous of the sending pilgrims, and think about how jealous they are of us. They're probably even more jealous of us than they are of the ones from the normal world, so...
You know, Andre, we know the book tells us that the greatest affliction in the universe is never to have been afflicted.
Right.
So
right.
If that's true, then we are indeed blessed.
Yeah.
But I think that the point I'm trying to make is we're called to service. We're called to service perhaps more than anybody else. So,
if I could say a joke, just follow up on that. I don't know if you guys ever heard this one, but there was this woman who was going through all these troubled, you know, afflictions and was just really living a life of turmoil. And she sat down with the Father and she said, Father, you know, I know you bring all these challenges my way, and I know that you'll never give me anything more than I can handle. I just wish you didn't hold me in such high esteem.
I love that one.
But, you know, it's funny. somewhere back we were talking about the plan, you know, that the adjuster has for us. And this is, like, the one point I did want to get in to all of this is that I think about 10 years ago I was reading the paper on the relation of the adjusters to individuals. And you guys all know this section because, you know, it's a section where you say they say you can consciously augment adjuster harmony by these four points. And I know I did, and I think I'm sure a lot of other people have. You said, well, why don't I just do those things? Because I want to have more harmony with my adjuster and be more, you know, in cooperation with them. And, you know, the four things are like choosing to respond to divine leading, loving God and desiring to be like him, loving man and sincerely desiring to serve him, and then joyful acceptance of cosmic citizenship.
Mm.
And I remember consciously saying, okay, well, I'm going to do these four things. I'm going to start making sure that I'm joyful of cosmic citizenship and I'm choosing to respond to divine leadings and I'm loving God. And it, for me, at the time, it became like this sort of like game of spiritual twister. You know, you're putting like right hand on red, left hand on blue, you know. And it just was like, how do you do all this? You know, it just didn't make sense. And at some point I made that prayer to be of service, and I just started serving. And then I remember going back into this section, and I recognized that I was doing all of these things. I was learning to respond to divine leadings. I mean, when you're in service to others, you get so many different opportunities to make decisions, and you get so many opportunities to say, Father, what is your will? You know, and I was learning increasingly to love God and desiring to be like him. I was learning to love man, and I was learning to serve him. And in all of this, you were starting to enjoy it. You were having this joyful acceptance of cosmic citizenship. And the point that I wanted to make in all of this is that service is the context of our spiritual growth because it's in the environment or through this medium of service, whichever way we choose, whatever we're led to do, you know, whether it's a struggle sometimes or whether it's a joy, through all of this, that is the arena in which we can sort of, I guess, I don't know if it's foster spiritual growth or realize it, but it's where we certainly where we experience it. And I guess, you know, just in finalizing all of that, it's the big point for me is this connection between service and spiritual growth because they go hand in hand. And, you know, it's as much a privilege to serve others you're doing as much for others as you're doing for yourself at the end of the day. And I think that is, I think that should be that one of the big attractions of serving is that there is this just beautiful spiritual economy about it.
And that, you know, really, that is what the book reiterates over and over again, Phil, is unselfish service, selfless service. And you know, I think that's an important distinction, the selflessness of service. And we have another caller, and we have about 6 minutes. Shall we take a caller?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then if we could, I'd like to have just a moment of reverent silence for our dear friend Joe Reza, who passed away last week. Sweet
Absolutely.
Man. He called in the show several times, and he's just a sweet man, and I'd love to wish him well on his way. 603, you're on Block Talk.
Hey, Paula, Andre, and Phil. This is from New Hampshire. How are you guys?
Good.
I've been listening all along, and I have some comments on service. I would take nothing away from Phil's school board service nor Christina's teaching, but I will say this, speaking only for myself, I've served on a local zoning board as a volunteer, unpaid, for over 20 years, and I might have called that civic duty or giving back to the community, but I never once for a minute saw that as service in the kingdom of God. Rather, the distinction I make is more along the lines of what Paulus was talking about in terms of spontaneously as Jesus passed by. These are the opportunities for service that I think are just precious little gems that pass by in our life. And when we do act, when we see a moment of need, and we do act spontaneously and unconsciously and joyfully without the left hand knowing what the right hand is doing, these acts come from what I call a predisposed attitude of soul. We act spontaneously because we've already decided we want to serve. So therefore, when it arises, there's no inner debate, there's no thought process. We are just moved to do it because our souls have already arrived at this attitude of service. So I think these are the real gems and I also want to take issue, again, speaking only for myself, that this is about, service is about relationships. Often these tiny little bits of precious service you do as you pass by, and you don't exchange names or email addresses or say, let's do lunch, or I'll have my people call your people. You don't even know who it is that you minister to. So I'm not so sure it's about relationships as much as it's important that we act, the act is ours, and the consequence is God's.
Well, I think ultimately it serves relationships, Lou, because
even if you don't know who you're serving,
suppose you serve somebody and you made all the difference for them in that day, they went home and were kinder to their wife and children because of it. I think ultimately all service serves relationship, and relationship meaning that we're all brothers and sisters in the family of God.
I had one more comment. There was some talk earlier about reward, whether here or in the next life. I think the reason it's called unselfish service is because it should never be reward motivated. You know, even the Destiny Gardens are selected because of their willingness to serve without recognition or reward, and that their names are seldom emblazoned on the pages of history. So the ancient book talks about how if you attach the notion of sacrifice, and I'm going to extend that to reward, to an otherwise fruitful act, you can rob that act of all its spiritual fruit just by boasting about the great sacrifice you made in this supposed area of service. So I think we have to be careful and just keep our motives pure. And
well, and I think, well, you know what? And I don't know if I'd say, I don't know if anybody's really got pure, totally pure motives, but I will say this, Lou. I think that maybe another way of putting it is that service is its own reward. You know, and
there
that's
you go.
And that's where we go back to the joy of service again.
And you know, when I say award, I'm really glad you said that, Lou, because to me, reward is the satisfaction you get for having been of service. And it's like Jesus saying to Gannett, did we not supremely enjoy that service?
So that
supreme enjoyment is the reward. I don't mean that somebody's going to come and give you an accolade or something. I don't mean that at all. The reward is the satisfaction you get in knowing that you've done something well and it has been of service. And my point was that sometimes you don't get to see it like Jesus and Gannett did right immediately. Sometimes you'll see the benefit of your service in a later, even in another life. But all good things, you know, it's like the book says, nothing of value is ever lost in all the universe. So.
Hey, Lou, this is Phil. Actually, I didn't catch your name at first, so I was kind of excited to my fellow New Englander.
Yeah, just across the river. We're almost 3 hours away from each other, Phil, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you come up tomorrow? We're having study group at my place.
I got to get up there. I do have to get up there. Lou and a couple of us in New England, we've been doing these little local meet and greets, which we're going to do another one hopefully in September, where we just, because we're so spread out, it's just nice for people all travel together and we just have a great sort of one-on-one just social thing, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, most of our Canterbury group is going to go down for the birthday party in Massachusetts.
Well, we'll see you there.
Yeah.
The one thing I did want to say, absolutely that, you know, service really, it's not intended upon or some sort of recognition. I think the one thing, and Paul and I know about this kind of working on the general counsel, is that we have to be careful not to take that, like, to the point where we don't acknowledge, you know, other people's service.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing. it's just real nice to hear a thank you or appreciate what you're doing, you know. And,
yeah, very, very, yeah, I agree.
Because I think at the end of the day, none of us are perfect servants, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
And we all need encouragement, Phil.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is challenging. So. And you know what, guys, we're down to 22 seconds.
Well, I'm glad I snuck in here at the end.
I'm glad you did too, Lou.
Yeah. We'll take us out then with that. You wanted to say that moment of silence for your friend?
This is for Bro. This is for our beautiful friend and brother, Joseph Reza. Be on your way, my dear friend, to the mansion world. And Godspeed. And we're with you in spirit. Thank you, my friend.
Good show, guys.
Hey, thank you very
okay.
much. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for being on with us.
You were awesome, Phil. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you, Paula. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, take care.
All right, you guys. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet, the letter X, net.com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.